Monday morning runs, Sunday night screaming. Slow me down before the New Year dies. Well, it won't take much to kill a loving smile, and every mother with a baby crying in her arms saying, give me help, give me strength, give a soul a night of fell asleep. Give me love, give me peace. Don't you know these days you pay for everything? Got high.
And now Dave Marsh, who's in town for this week's Folk Alliance International Conference in town. For 25 years, Marsh has written and edited the monthly music and politics newsletter, Rock and Roll Confidential. He's got a big presence on Sirius XM Radio. And, of course, as I mentioned, he's a big Bruce Springsteen fan. What a pleasure to have him here. Dave Marsh, welcome to Up to Date.
Thanks, Steve.
That's your guy. That's your guy.
Well, you know, he's certainly not my only guy.
Yeah.
So I have to be careful not to get too Bruce exclusive. So I was glad to see that you started with a song that he sang but didn't write.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah. You took that from an Australian band called The Saints.
Mm-hmm.
Very different. He completely rewrote it, or almost completely.
Well, it is so fun to have you here because, you know, you do a lot of radio, and my producers oftentimes tell me that, hey, you know, you've got a guest coming in the next hour, and you can easily go half an hour with them, and you're 15 minutes in, and you're like, okay, we've sort of done this thing. You're one of those guys I could go probably 2 years with and still have stuff to talk about, so it's great to have you here.
You've done so much stuff.
You know, there's Elvis, and there are the Beatles, and then is there Springsteen? Does he belong in that sort of constellation?
Well, I think you're kind of skipping over a few people.
Okay, that's what I'm asking.
I mean, if you skip over, Little Richard, if you skip over Chuck Berry, if you skip over the Stones, if you skip over Bob Dylan, and it goes on like that for Sly Stone, it goes on like that for a little while, and then you get to this kid from New Jersey, and you know. And like all the rest of those people whose names we just said between the two of us, he's an original. But unlike any of the people who came before him, he's a synthesizer of everything that came before him.
Hmm.
And then he comes out at the other end, and now he's really a much more unique voice than he was when he wrote Born to Run, say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But or even Born in the USA. You know, because he's aged well, and there aren't very many of them that did that.
Yeah.
You know, Tim and Bob and I don't know who else.
I was going to say he's endured, and so many of those names you just mentioned did
actually,
not.
Actually, Smokey Robinson, who's 75 today.
Mm-hmm. They've endured, but a lot of them didn't.
No, well, you know, I mean, that's like how many people played hockey as long as Gordie Howe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
and, you know, people do run out of gas. It's not exactly athletic. On stage can be. It certainly is with Bruce. But, you know, it's music, even in classical music, if you look at it, people tend to do their greatest work early. It's like math.
Why is that? I've often wondered about that.
Yeah, me too. And I think it's a high-energy task, and your energy does wane a bit. And
don't we know?
But I think in the rock field, at least, which I do know enough, and you know, in R&B and soul music and stuff, even hip hop, I think that part of it is that there isn't a whole lot of encouragement to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, from the record company's point of view, stick around. If you're good enough to stick around, you start to get expensive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem.
Yeah, because it may not mean that the record sales. So look, so you got Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, Barbara Streisand on Columbia Records. If they lose one of them, it's news. If they sign one of them and put out their records, it's going to be kind of ho-hum because they're not going to have a number one record anymore. It's 20, you know, it's 50 years after Bob and Barbara started their career, and it's 40-some after Bruce. So, you know, that's part of it. And also, the people in our society who are most interested in pop music tend to be adolescents.
Yeah.
And young adults. And so that can, you know, I always, my working theory was always that the only thing more boring than your older brother's band is your younger brother's band. So.
Rock critic Dave Marsh is my guest. You know, I'm just guessing here, Dave, that when Springsteen came on the scene back in the mid-70s, he must have hit a guy like you like a 2x4.
Well, it is interesting how I saw him. I mean, the record, the first record, I liked quite a lot. He was getting to be compared to a new Dylan. I actually wrote a review in Cream magazine where I said, no, he's more like a new Carl Perkins, which I got that right.
Mm-hmm.
So then I moved from Detroit to New York in the summer of 73, and he was going to play Max's Kansas City, so I was going to go. But it wasn't Bruce that I was going to see, because the other act was Bob Marley and the Wailers in a 150-seat room.
Wow.
And they were both pretty amazing. But I did something I've never done before. I went home, and I filed my story by phone at Newsday, which, as you'll recall, involved a lot of spelling in those days. Every proper noun.
Yeah, there you go. You used to be very careful in those days,
and
right?
And then I went back uptown to see the second show, because I had missed a little bit of Bruce's show, and I knew that I didn't, you know, I never did that. I don't even think I've ever done it for anybody since.
How did he hit you right out of the gate then?
Well, part of it was that he had a very ambitious kind of band in terms of, you know, he had a horn, which wasn't common in rock bands. You know, he had two keyboards. If he decided to sing and move around, there was no guitar. I mean, there were just a whole lot of things about it. This is still when Vinny Lopez was a drummer, and David Sanchez, who's an amazing, amazing musician. You know, it's actually true about that night that I went back to see David and Clarence and Bruce and Gary, the bass player, who actually had played in one of those sets. He played tuba on Wild Billy's Circus Story, not to be done again, I guess, until last spring in Australia. Saw that one too. You know, it was that he had a sense of humor, which most of the singer-songwriters didn't, and it was something about it. I mean, I didn't know anything about the ocean. I knew about, you know, the Great Lakes. But there was something about the stories he was telling that resonated with that whole working class thing that, you know, I carry like a huge chip on my shoulder even yet from my days in Pontiac and Detroit.
Mm-hmm. We played a little cut from High Hopes, his latest album. What do you make of it?
Well, I know a little bit about how it got made, and so I know that, you know, it wasn't like a planned record, like some of them are. But he had a bunch of interesting things lying around that were very worthy of getting onto an LP, a studio LP, in the case of a couple of songs, which he was doing live a lot. And he had an asset that could not be neglected called Tom Morello. Because Tom Morello, who was originally in Rage Against the Machine and is now the Night Watchman as a solo act, Tom is a great, great guitar player and a unique guitar player and a very aggressive guitar player. And he toured with the band for about 18 months or 2 years. And really, you know, there's some good guitar players in the E Street Band, too. Mm-hmm. There's Nils Lofgren to start with. And, you know, so I think that I think they just didn't want to miss that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure how it adds up, but I know that there are some songs on there that Hunter of Invisible Game, that's a great song, which Tom rescued. You know, he heard Brendan O'Brien, who was the producer of some of Bruce's albums, played it for Tom as an outtake, and Tom just said, you know, we got to do something with the song.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's interesting in that way, because it goes back to an earlier part of Bruce's career where his producers were more collaborators. So it's interesting in that way. And there's no real airplay for these records now, so you kind of got to learn them.
Mm-hmm.
Something like Frankie Fell in Love, that's one of the best rock songs he's written in a long time, and that really harkens back to those early days.
Yeah.
You know, and just in its energy level.
Dave Marsh is my guest. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. How did you two become friends? How did that work?
I intruded upon him as a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I knew him a little bit, and I moved up to Boston, and I was working with a guy named John Landau, who had been my editor, actually still was, when I occasionally wrote record reviews for Rolling Stone. So John knew that I had met Bruce, and he was fascinated by Bruce's second album. So he said, well, come on, go to the show with me. And I said, well, I'm supposed to go with my girlfriend tomorrow. He said, just come on. I'll buy dinner. So off we go. This is April of 74. Walk up to the little joint he's playing in. And there stands this ragamuffin character with holes in his jeans and black leather jacket with his hands in his back pockets, jumping, bouncing up and down on his Cuban-heeled boots, reading John's review of Wild, the Innocent, and the East Street Shuffle that is posted in the window.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wish I was good enough to make that scene up.
Yes, right.
And so I reintroduced myself to Bruce. And then kind of stood back while, you know, watched the sparks fly, especially when Michael Pell, who was then Bruce's manager and producer, and for the production of that record, John had some sharp words, deservedly so. So then Mike comes out, and we sit at this table, and Bruce and I are sort of sitting across from each other. But we're not saying anything because we're just watching the other two guys joust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was one of those. And then he went out, and he had not by now. David Sanchez was still in the band. Vinny had left the band, and there was a young black drummer who actually worked with David a lot after that too, named Ernest Carter, Boom Carter. And the show, I mean, I'd seen a show or two, or three, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This was a whole different. That was actually one of the great music nights of my life. We got home about 3 o'clock. By 7:30 or so, John and I were on the phone talking to each other about how great it was.
Wow!
Like that,
wow.
One of those nights.
Yeah, which is so wonderful.
Yeah, you know, and then John and Bruce worked together a lot. John, when he first had moved, at some point, John moved down to New York and was staying with me and my wife, and our kids, basically sleeping on a couch in the living room. And he and Bruce, you know, were having meetings. So I bump into Bruce that way. I wrote a couple other stories about him for Cream and for Cream. I think I wrote a story about him for Penthouse, who I wrote occasionally for.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, if you go to see Gary Bonds, you're going to run into Bruce and Steve.
Yeah.
And plus, I was a big Southside fan, and Southside was very active at that point.
You know, you have such an interesting history, Dave, and I wanted to ask you a question that the New York Times asks each week of an author in its book review section. You know, you can invite three people to dinner. From the music industry, you'd invite which three? Who's coming to Dave Marsh's
house? Well, not from the
house?
Music industry. We stick to musicians. Actually, it'd be easy from the musician. It's if it was just people from the industry, I'd invite John Hammond and Harold Leventhal and Barry Gordy. But it's trickier when you come down to musicians because I was, you know, would I pick people who I never had the chance to meet? Would I pick people who I got to meet once, and it was a brilliant occasion. Muddy Waters and Ray Charles come to mind.
Huh.
Would I pick? I'm not going to pick the people that I, you know, see once every other year or something. You know, I'm not going to pick Pete Townsend. So, you know, who do I pick? Well, Elvis.
Would you?
Oh, yeah. And James Brown.
Huh.
Because this is an event at which I don't want to talk. I want to listen.
Yeah, they would talk, eh?
Well, or maybe they'd sing. I don't know what they do.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole – that's to me, inside that question is another question. Is like, well, what are you going to do together? Are you going to eat a meal, or are you going to
eat a meal? That's the.
I guess that's the operative idea. Well, you know, so Elvis and James Brown means we're having barbecue.
And who's your third?
So there goes. Well, you know, and I got to think of somebody who's not a vegetarian.
It gets complicated here, doesn't it?
You know, Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong.
Yeah, that'd be the right choice. You know,
well, wouldn't that be something?
You know, and those are all people in my lifetime. You know, those are all people who, you know, I can remember seeing on television, or I can remember seeing in concert, or both. In James's case, in the same room, some, not much, but you know, and. But they're astonishing people, and they change the course of everything. Those three people, Louis Armstrong more than anybody else in the 20th century.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's definitely in America, possibly in the United States and Europe too. You know, that the scatting and the phrasing on the trumpet and the kind of band he led and the kind of rhythm attack that band had and all those things, you know.
You know, a few years ago, you wrote an entire book on the Beatles' second album, and the boys didn't even write many of those songs. So why a book on the Beatles' second album?
Well, they asked me, the publisher asked me to, it was Rodale Press, of all things. I said, well, we're doing a series of books, which, if there are any other books in the series, I never saw them. But we'd like you to write about a Beatles album, because it's sort of become voguish. I wrote a book called Louie Louie. Nobody had ever written a book about one song before. Then there was Spade of Them, and then they feel, oh, well, we can have people write about a whole album.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I know what record I want to write about, but I don't think you're going to want me to do it. And they said, well, what record do you want to write about? I said, the Beatles' second album. And they said, well, do you mean With the Beatles? Because that's the name of the one in Britain. And I said, no, I mean the American one. And they said, well, it's only 11 songs, and it's only like 22 minutes. I said, you give us 22 minutes, I'll give you the world,
mm-hmm.
which is a radio station, a news station slogan in for—
Somewhere.
In New York. I'm trying to remember which station. But anyway, so the editor, Pete Fornatale Jr., his father was a disc jockey, Pete said, okay. And so I said about— You know, because it was their R&B. Look, one of the things I learned about myself, because you always learn something if it's any good, in writing that book was that I was already an R&B snob when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
And because I remember I didn't trust the Beatles because they had done Till There Was You on the first album. And so I didn't know if they were really committed to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the second album has She Loves You. It has their version of Money. It has a very obscure Detroit R&B record called Devil in Her Heart. It has the record that really changed my life more than any other record ever, which has really got a hold on me. And that was a record I needed to write about. And mm-hmm. the fact that they didn't write a lot of it was actually played into that in a way. Because I think that the greatest song they ever did was She Loves You.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which they wrote like sitting on beds in this little English hotel room, you know, kind of knee to knee. I mean, all the story is known about how they wrote the song, but it's such an amazing, I mean, the lyric, which is, you know, reported dialogue. It's not he said, she said. It's she feels, you better listen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's and then the energy level in that track is just, you know, is by far my favorite Beatles track. Anyway, so I just think sometimes you get a better story out of small things than you do out of big things.
That's interesting.
If you're gonna write a book, you better find a story.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's like so many things I want to ask you, and we're running short of time. I guess one thing I was going to ask you is you're not big on Kiss, you're not big on Journey, right? Forget those guys. You don't like either
one
of those acts.
If only I could.
Yeah. You don't like them.
Well, it's not – I don't like them. I don't like their music.
Music, yeah.
You know, kind of I don't like Kiss.
And that interview that Gene's
it's kind of personal. It gets kind of personal with Kiss, but that's just, you know, that's just part of the
well, they make things
the role playing.
That know? Famous interview that Gene Simmons did with Terry Gross, it's still legendary world.
I'll tell you something. This whole period, that same summer that I went to see Bruce and Bob Marley, somebody told me that Eddie Kramer, the great producer of Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin, was going to work with this band called Kiss. So I went with this legendary Australian journalist, Lillian Roxon, and we went to the Diplomat Hotel, which we'd previously only seen the New York Dolls at. And here's this band, and we see them play. And I wrote something about a bunch of up-and-coming bands in New York. It was an article that turned out to get syndicated, like in Cream, in Melody Maker, in London, et cetera. And what I said about them was, I don't like them at all. They're going to be the biggest band out of this whole scene.
And they were.
And I got to say, Gene never forgot that. And, I mean, this was so early, I don't think they had the makeup, because I can remember being backstage, and I don't remember any makeup.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really, really early. So, you know, it's not like I didn't give them a chance.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure to have you, Dave. He's in town for the Folk Alliance Conference. We're going to go out with a song I think that you like a whole lot. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming,
Steve.
In.
It's great to be here.
That's music writer, music critic, Dave Marsh.